curated to encourage leaders at all levels to be their best selves and to bring a fresh, curious perspective to today's issues in business and culture. Our goal is to equip listeners with the resources to always move forward.
Welcome to the Always Forward Leadership Podcast. I'm Carla Sullins here once again with Ron Kitchens.
Hey, Carla.
How are you today, Ron?
I am awesome.
Good, good. It's a beautiful day here in Michigan. Today, we're going to be talking about something that I know some people are going to give a big eye roll because data can cause some people to get really uncomfortable. But we're going to be talking today about how you can actually use analytics or data to really power and drive your business to a point where your business is thriving. So I know this is something that at Southwest Michigan First and in your entire leadership career, you have really tried to tap into. But why is this so important?
I think data comes back to this idea that analytics, knowing the numbers, takes success from serendipity of, oh, I got lucky, to, you know what, I make good decisions based around the information that I had. And, you know, we get stuck in today's world of big data and it's complicated. And, you know, we've all seen the movie Moneyball and you had to understand all these things, or it's Wall Street kind of data. But data is simply a strategic advantage in that you have access to information that allows you to make good decisions that your competitors either don't have or don't take the time to utilize. And when I was young, as you know, we've talked before, I started out in the gas business, in the gas station convenience store business, and owned a number of locations. And one year I decided that I was going to expand and do bulk fluids. So bulk oil, 55-gallon drums of antifreeze and oil, and sell to farms. I had a outlet that I could buy wholesale from, and I could sell to farms. And so when I went to see my banker to talk about the cash flow I'd need to do this, he said, tell me why this is going to work. And I went through all of the data about how many farms there were that I could serve, what the market was, what the pricing was, went through all of my data sets. And he said, you know, I'm still not sure this is going to work, but your data has convinced me that I want to invest in you. And it did work. And so but my strategic advantage wasn't just that I could buy the stuff wholesale. My strategic advantage was that I knew all the information about who my customers were. And I think if we think simply, it was that my friend Chris Gibbons, you know, who founded the idea of economic gardening and the Economic Gardening Institute. You know, when Chris started, that was all about data. What data could he gather for small businesses that he could pour into them that would allow them to grow and thrive in a way that businesses in other communities couldn't? We all can understand that concept. The hard part is the question of what data do I need? And that's really where people get stuck.
I think you're right. That is where people get stuck. And I think, unfortunately, there are a lot of people out there with really good ideas, a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of innovators that have really good ideas, and they get stuck in where is the right place to start with my data? Because that's often the thing that you feel the in your gut that you have a good idea, or you've had customers come and say they need something. But how do you start to track and collect enough data to make a good business case? So can you walk us back to when you kind of joined Southwest Michigan First? And I know there was a push at that time to really be able to share how the organization was successfully meeting the mission of growing jobs. And that seems like an easy thing to ask if you're a board member or an investor. But you know, in economic development, it can be really tricky to show that impact. So how did you go about that process with the team of identifying what is the right data to be tracking?
I think, you know, there's a great book out there, Stephen Covey book, 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. It's on our team read. Every member of Southwest Michigan First has read that book. But one of the concepts in it that I use almost daily is begin with the end in mind. So if our ultimate goal is, you know, our belief that the greatest force for change is a job. So if we want private companies to employ people, we have to work backwards from there. And what are the things that we need to do And so there's environmental issues, there's ground, there's tax things. But also from our perspective, the things we control are, if we look from the announcement, where did that deal come from? So for us, we define that as a prospect. Prior to that, it was a suspect. Prior to that, it was a lead. And we began to compile the data on, okay, how many leads do we have that turn into suspects, that turn into prospects, that turn into announcements? What's the average job number of announcements? What's the average wage of those announcements? And by understanding that stream of decision making, we know if we want to increase the output, we have to increase the input at the other end. And sometimes that input will take 2 or 3 years to get through the pipeline. So it isn't something we can do overnight. So by being strategic and understanding what that is, and understanding that certain jobs announced will pay at a higher rate, then we can go back and say, okay, what do we have to do in the pipeline to focus on those jobs? And sometimes it's, well, we got to make sure that we're doing job training correctly and we're pipelining for that. And so we're constantly working through that data. Our latest thing is we're heavily focused on design-based companies. So companies that design consumer products, products that the consumer ends up with, because our data, again, tells us that those jobs on average pay very, very well. They're in the top 20% in terms of pay, but they also create very young workers. And so creatives that tend to stay in communities they're in to start their own companies, to build capacity, but that companies are much more profitable who are design driven to the consumer as opposed to just selling, producing a commodity product. So we've had ongoing studies about what that looks like. For us, food packaging is one of those design products. You know, we have the best company in the country making green cups, greenware, that are biodegradable, so no more plastic cups going into the landfill. We have a company that makes the best yogurt cups, cereal boxes. If you're eating a Kellogg's cereal this morning, and I hope you are, or a bar or any of the Lego products or Pringles, you know, a lot of that packaging is designed here in our community, and it's around this design. But we didn't get there by accident. We got there because the data told us that's where we should go.
So, Ron, as you were kind of talking through that, you know, what we internally would call our scoreboard, which is really well-defined right now. But I think one of the things that I think we need to talk about for the listening audience is the fact that you have to start somewhere. And usually that starts with a conversation. From our perception of where we are today and what research tells us, what are the metrics that could contribute to whatever that goal is? And then you have to do the hard work of saying, like, we're going to start with these couple that we're going to track and measure, because we know based on other people's success or gut instinct or intuition that they lead to the result. But you have to start. And I think for a lot of companies, this conversation goes on for years.
Yeah.
You almost can have what they would call like analysis by paralysis or paralysis by analysis.
Yeah.
There's always more data. There's always more data. There's always another metric. So how have we managed that at Southwest Michigan First? Because we collect a lot more and have a lot more data than what you would see on a scoreboard that's very visual if you came into our office. But how do we keep some of those metrics off the scoreboard yet still hold them near and dear because we know that they may influence that scoreboard?
Yeah, I think that's something that our management team, which is six of us, are constantly looking at, struggling with, saying, okay, is what we're measuring important? What are the things we're not measuring that are equally as important that we've got to have out there to constantly be focused on? But it is also knowing that we have reporting data that is on results or activities, but then we have projection data that tells us if we do those things, what we can expect. So the results data goes up on the scoreboard. We're constantly paying attention to it. But our projecting data that tells us here are the things we need to do, we have to constantly be looking at and reviewing. and knowing that outside forces have the ability to change the direction of that data. And if we're not attuned to that, we risk the sailboat that doesn't adjust to the wind. You become becalmed and you're bobbing in the water, or you're completely knocked over and you sink. So we've got to constantly know what's important and take responsibility to stay active in that data. And not everybody has to stay active at everything. People get to specialize, but they also have to be able to say, hey, the world changed. We need to adjust our sails. Right now, we're at a time of national low unemployment. And literally in our region, some would tell you that there are more jobs available than there are people to work. But it tells us a different strategy. We're working far less on, you know, developing land and sites like we were a few years ago to developing people, you know, and we've even moved our whole projections around to talk about projecting the economy based on available labor and talent versus projecting the economy about our need to create jobs. And it's a different modeling, but the outcome is the same. We believe the greatest force for change is a job, but how you get there is what has to change, and the data informs your path. You know, in this paralysis thing, I said it on a previous podcast, a man who has to have all the answers before he starts a trip never starts the trip. Just start. Collect some data. It's going to create more needs. You're going to see where the holes are. But just this last week, Heather Baker, who's in charge of our marketing and communications, found a new way to look at data that really informed how we could make some decisions that we hadn't noticed before, but had been in front of us all for years. So it's going to constantly evolve.
So one of the things on the scoreboard that people often ask a lot of questions about, and it doesn't really fit with necessarily what some would say is our business metrics, although both you and I would argue it's one of the most important business metrics, is our employee and board engagement. And why do you feel, and I know you're kind of preaching to the choir talking to me about it because I'm right there with you talking about the importance, but for the listening audience, why is that something that's visible to anybody who walks in our office? They can see that number of how engaged our team is. And why is that collecting data on that and really using that data so important to the culture?
There's a couple of reasons. Engagement is important. So, and I'm sure I'm butchering the number. I'm wrong by plus or minus 10%. But, you know, Gallup tells us that companies that are highly engaged, their employees are, you know, are 30% or so more profitable. So you get more return with fewer people. So in an organization like ours and in most consulting organizations, people are our number one cost. It's people and rent are two big costs. So we know if we can get more out of people. But the other thing is, it's not just more out of people. They're doing more and giving more because they're happier. And it's like the California ad for cheese. Happy cows give you better cheese. And in our case, happy, engaged people who feel loved. You don't have turnover. When we have somebody leave the organization, invariably it's to go run their own shop, and we encourage that. But it's also important that number be up on the wall, because it isn't a badge of courage that you hide in your desk. It's a number that we own as a team. And we've established as a team what our benchmarks are and what's important to and what we're going to aspire to. But then the survey's done in complete anonymity by a third party. And so we can tell if the number drops, it's stress is high and we forgot to talk to each other. And, you know, around budget time, it always happens. So we've moved our budget 2 months earlier. So we have longer to go through it. We can have more people involved to try to mitigate that stress and that feeling disconnected from it. And then measuring our board satisfaction, our board meets 6 times a year. And at the end of the meeting, we ask in real time, how'd we do? Did the meeting agenda meet your needs? Did you get time to participate? How are you feeling in real time, anonymously using clickers? I know they're not called clickers, they're voting devices. But doing that, and we have expectations for the board. And we're having discussion in real time. Oh, we're down in this area. What could we have done better? And it puts the ownership back on the board members to participate, not in staff to just entertain. And those go up on the wall too, because we want, you know, and it's critical for us too. They're up on the wall where anybody can see them. Visitors see them, because we know we're going to be held accountable to our data. Everyone needs to be accountable to it, and we don't want to be embarrassed by anything. So don't let things that are embarrassing go up there.
And I think it's so important because, you know, you often hear about the loudest voice in the room doesn't necessarily mean that that's the voice that everyone is feeling that they're resonating with. And using the data and really using outside surveys, using handheld devices, and really collecting and pulsing that data allows us to establish the baseline of what is really the true sentiment of not just the team, but the board too. Because sometimes you only hear from a really loud voice, positive or negative, and there's a lot underneath that, that if you don't dig for it, you may or may not know. And you can't make informed decisions based off just one person's most vocal.
Ignorance is the enemy. If we're ignorant to people's needs, wants, and desires, then we're going to stumble as an organization, and our mission's too important to make really dumb, uninformed decisions.
Ron, I know as we were really talking through this podcast and why we felt like analytics was an important conversation to have, one of the things you kept going back to was this fire of, you know, not being afraid to get started. And I know you talked about that early, but I think that's the perfect way to close, because data can be really overwhelming to people. And it can be one of those things that you're not sure if you picked the right data, you're not sure if you have enough data. For as much certainty in what you think data should provide, for most people, it causes them to feel like, ugh, like I'm not sure we have what we need to get started. So what are your kind of closing words of advice for people as they begin to create more data systems and collecting analytics and using those analytics to power their business or organization?
So as we've talked before, I'm dyslexic. And so the type of dyslexia I have gives me the ability to recognize faces. People laugh that when we're on business trips, you know, I'll see four celebrities that everybody else saw and nobody recognized. But that's facial recognition is one of those gifts I have because of the kind of dyslexia I have. I get strategy because of the kind I have. I'm very strategic, but patterns and doing processes, so math, I'm just not good at. And so much of data is numbers driven, which is a jumble to me. So I build data in stories. So I tell the story to myself, and jobs is, you know, my thing. But okay, if I want 100 people to have a job, what do I have to do for those 100 people to get a job? And then I work backwards and I tell the story that I've got. We know to get one announcement, what we do. So we know we have to put 100 suspects into a pool to get 40 prospects. And of those 40 prospects, we're going to convert 21 of those into announcements. And of those 21, the average, I think, for us right now is 37 or 38 jobs in that. So I know if I want to do 100 jobs for people, that I have to double and triple up that number at the beginning to do that. But I see faces. I see groups of people when I do it. I don't let the numbers overwhelm me. And I think you have to find out how you story tell to yourself. There's other people on our team who love the numbers. Justine loves the numbers, and she can work you through all that. She can mash all of that together. Yeah, I don't see those pictures at all. So don't be intimidated. Just find out what you want and work backwards from there.
I think that's great advice for those of you that are trying to get started in this. So thank you for sharing it, Ron, and we'll see you next week.
See you next week.
Thanks for joining us. We hope today's conversation inspired you to keep moving forward on your leadership journey. To connect with Ron, you can tweet him at Ron Kitchens or send him a message via ronkitchens.com. If you are listening via iTunes, please leave a review. It really helps us connect to you, grow our impact, and keep moving always forward.